And good afternoon and welcome to What the World Needs Now. This is your host, Ken Johnston. I want to praise and thank God for all of our listeners and thank you for all that you do for us here at In His Sign Catholic Radio, both your financial and prayerful contributions that have kept us on the air for over 40 years and allows us to bring you great shows like today's. One of the ways you can help us financially is coming up on October the 17th when we have our annual golf outing. It's one of the two big fundraisers that we have each year, along with our Wake Up America dinner that we usually have in the spring. This year, we will be at Talamore Country Club on Tuesday, October the 17th. That's right, Tuesday. Every year, up till now, it's been on a Monday. So a slight change on the day of the week. And again, the venue changed to Talamore Country Club in Ambler. There's multiple ways you can help us. There's multiple levels of sponsorship that can be had, as well as coming out and playing golf. And if you don't want to play golf, you can always just join us for the dinner. At the dinner, we'll have the awards from golf, along with a silent auction, 50-50, and various ways to raise money. So it's a really important event for us. Again, we thank you for all that you do for us with your financial contributions. It's the only way that we can afford to keep buying airtime and provide shows like today's. So again, thank you for all that you do. For all the information on the outing, you can go to our website at inhissign.com, scroll to the bottom of the homepage, and you can click on the link to download the brochure that has all the information. If you have any questions or need to make reservations, you can contact Maureen at 610-527-2906. That's the normal number here. Again, 610-527-2906. And without any further ado, we're going to go ahead and bring in our guest. Our guest today is Mary Beth Bracey, and she works with Sophia Institute Press. And she's been my contact for the past few months for all the great authors that we've been bringing you that have published their works through Sophia. And one of the things that Sophia has started doing, Mary Beth, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it seemed more recently, is publishing either works by authors that are no longer walking around on this planet, they're deceased, or they've published books in other languages. So I think a couple of times we've had Kristen Van Uden, who's been like the spokesperson for some of those books, and we're blessed today to have yourself, Mary Beth Bracey, with us to talk about a couple of those books. So thanks, Mary Beth, for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Very glad to be here.
The two books that we're going to talk about, one is called I Would Like to Travel the World, Thérèse of Lisieux, Miracle Worker, Doctor, and Missionary. And the book we'll talk about in the second half of the show is called I Believe in Love, a Personal Retreat Based on the Teaching of St. Thérèse of Lisieux, written by Father Jean C.J. D'Elby. And in the past, I've not been a huge fan of the little flower, and not because of anything positive or negative that I've come across. It's just it wasn't one of the saints that was in my arsenal, if you will. And I started to read Father D'Elby's book, I Believe in Love, This Personal Retreat, and it really, really well done. And like I said, we're going to talk about that one in the second half. But this first one, I didn't get to take much of a look at. And as a matter of fact, when I got here to the studio today, your package arrived, so I got a number of the books, so thank you for that. But this one, I Would Like to Travel the World, Thérèse of Lisieux. And Thérèse had said before she passed that she, you know, when she got to heaven, it was going to, or that she was going to work harder in heaven than she did when she was on earth to bring souls to Christ. And it kind of almost sounded like universalism, if you want. And I know that's a troublesome word for some people today. But obviously, Christ wants everybody in heaven, and so did Thérèse of Lisieux. That doesn't necessarily mean everybody's going to get there. But the latter part of this book, where it talks about the traveling, was pretty interesting. But who was Father D'Elby? What was his connection to St. Thérèse?
So Bishop Gouchet, who wrote I Would Like to Travel the World.
Or, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Too many great authors, too many great books.
Yeah.
So Bishop Goucher was actually the bishop of St. Therese's hometown in Lisieux, and he wrote the French edition of this book, which we recently translated into English. He was flooded with all sorts of miracles that St. Therese worked, and so he selected 17 testimonies from the 1990s into the 2000s that he really thought stood out. And he also published many books on St. Therese himself, including The Story of a Life. Also, he was in charge of directing all of the critical editions of her works, which is really remarkable, because if he hadn't done that, then St. Therese would not be a doctor of the church, because that had to be completed in order for that to be accomplished. A lot of people don't realize that in addition to writing her autobiography, Story of a Soul, she wrote plays and poetry and numerous letters, so those all had to be scrutinized before that step could be taken.
And I found that rather interesting. So, you know, one of the saints that I do have a particular fondness for is St. Maximilian Kolbe, and I was gifted with a couple volumes of his writings. And it was probably somewhere in the area of 3,000 pages. And when I was reading about Bishop Goucher and the work that he did, and it was over 6,000 pages, I think 6,500 pages, that were put together as a result of all the Little Flowers writings. I don't think most people would have a clue that she had written that much.
Definitely. So she was really a genius. She had memorized entire parts of The Imitation of Christ also. She painted frescoes. She did so many remarkable things that people really have no idea about.
So you mentioned the miracles that the bishop would outline in the book. And what types of miracles does he actually talk about?
So there's really a wide array. First of all, they're from people in all different walks of life, so from infants to young adults to the elderly. And some people were losing faith. Some people were agnostics. Some people were struggling with addictions. There's testimonies from medical doctors, one whose baby was healed that didn't expect to live. Others of toddlers who were scalded by something hot. And actually, this was kind of interesting. So a toddler was scalded by boiling hot water and ended up in the hospital. And they had to kind of, you know, keep him quiet so that they could put the medications and things on his abdomen. And his mother had gone away for a little break for a while. And when she came back, she was wondering why there was no longer a bandage on his abdomen. And when she went in and talked to her son, he said, "Well, Mommy, St. Therese came and healed me." And his mother was really confused by that, because he had never heard of St. Therese before, but he was really insistent upon it. And when the doctors looked, there was no longer any scalding there. It was completely gone. So sometimes really remarkable stories where something happens kind of in ordinary life, but then something really extraordinary happens as a result. And in each case, people were really completely changed, and they developed a really outstanding personal relationship with the Lord.
Interesting. And I have to apologize, because the reason I was hesitating was, you know, you'd sent me a bio, and I didn't have it in front of me when you first came on. And I just want to take a step back, because you're actually more involved with St. Therese of Lisieux yourself than I originally thought. So our guest, Mary Beth Bracy, is a consecrated virgin of the Diocese of Ogdensburg, New York. She's a writer who's blessed to research, publish, and speak extensively on various aspects of Catholic spirituality. Her books include Behold the Lamb, Bread of Life, and The Little Way of Healing, Love Through the Passion of Jesus, The Stations of the Cross with St. Therese of Lisieux. She's also co-authored of the book Stories of the Eucharist. She's written articles for numerous Catholic publications and recorded some Catholic talks. For more information, you can view her blog by visiting The Little Way. She shares her birthday with St. Therese of Lisieux, and chose St. Therese as her patron saint at confirmation. She was blessed with the opportunity to visit St. Therese's home, Carmel, and Bas at Lisieux, France, in Lisieux, France, sorry, during her pilgrimage to World Youth Day in 1997, where it was announced that St. Therese will be declared a doctor of the church. And so, again, thank you, Mary Beth, and even with the links that you've already had with St. Therese, especially sharing her birthday, and being there when she was declared a doctor of the church, leads to the next question. Why was that so revolutionary when it occurred?
So another thing that I think not everyone might be familiar with is that St. Therese is the youngest doctor of the church and one of only four women who is a doctor of the church. So it wasn't until, I believe, 1970 that there were any doctors of the church who were women at all. And then I think oftentimes when we think of doctors of the church, we think of really learned men, like St. Thomas Aquinas, for instance. So a lot of people who might only have images of the little flower in their head as somebody who's depicted with roses or who's somebody who's depicted as very young might kind of scratch their heads and say, how can somebody like this compare with Aquinas? But the process that's gone through to establish somebody as a doctor of the church show that their teachings have the marks of orthodoxy and wisdom, that their doctrine is standard and useful for everyone. And all of those things were proven in St. Therese's writings because, as Pope Benedict XV said, her way of spiritual childhood is the path to heaven. And John Paul II said that the reason he was declaring her a doctor of the church is because she is an expert in the science of love. I learned something as I was researching this and reading this book also, which is that a lot of really esteemed theologians compared her thinking to St. Thomas Aquinas because of basically the genius that's contained in them when you examine them closely. So her little doctrine of confidence and love is universal and accessible to all, but it was really revolutionary because of both her age and her gender.
Yeah, and when you when you get to know Therese Lisieux, you realize that it really, like you say, she was so young, but she started at such a young age. I think soon after her first communion, if I'm not mistaken, that she knew that she wanted to be consecrated to Jesus, that she followed her sister to the into the cloister, and really just a magnificent soul. And like all saints, struggled quite a bit in the convent, and which makes, as you're unveiling some of this information that most people may not be aware of, it makes it even more miraculous, if you will, that under the circumstances that she experienced in the cloister, that she was able to do all of this, whether it was painting frescoes, writing plays and poetry and what have you, that somehow or other in her short life she was able to accomplish all these things despite all the hardships that we tend to hear more about, I think.
Yes, definitely. I don't think people realize necessarily either how much she suffered. So, for instance, even though we know those things about her now, at that time they weren't necessarily well known even among her sisters or necessarily appreciated by some of her community members. Not long before St. Therese passed away, she could overhear a few of the other nuns talking about her and saying, what are we going to put in her obituary? There's nothing remarkable about her life. So I think that she definitely had sufferings in terms of, as we all do sometimes with those around us, but also in terms of her extreme physical sufferings with the tuberculosis, and also the fact that she lost her mother when she was only 4 years old to breast cancer, or after she entered the Carmel, how her father developed a form of dementia. So I think that St. Therese is somebody that a lot of people can relate to once they get to know her better, because they realize that she had struggles, some which were not too different than our own.
Amen. This first book that we're talking about today is called I Would Like to Travel the World, Therese of Lisieux, Miracle Worker, Doctor, and Missionary. again, originally written by Bishop Guy Gaucher. Is it Goucher? Gaucher?
Goucher, yeah.
Goucher, and translated recently from French to English by Sophia Institute. Available at Sophia's website and locally here in the Philadelphia market. I encourage you to purchase it from the St. Jude shop before you run out to any of the other big online book dealers. Give Sophia or St. Jude your business. So in the subtitle, it mentions Thérèse Lisieux, miracle worker, doctor, and missionary. You talked a little bit about the miracles that the bishop chronicles in the book, and we just talked about how Teresa ended up becoming a doctor of the church. But the part three, I think, is pretty fascinating as I started to go through it, this tour that went on. And then when I first saw the title, I would like to travel the world. I wasn't sure, quite sure where it was going. And then when I got the copy of the book and started to look at it, I realized that somehow or other that Thérèse, after she died, was touring around the world via her relics. So
yes. So in her autobiography, Story of a Soul, St. Thérèse said that she had the vocation of an apostle, and it was her desire to preach the gospel on all the five continents simultaneously and even to the most remote isles. So at this point, her relics have traveled to five continents and have been venerated by millions, so to over 25 countries and counting. And tens of thousands of people have flocked in various countries to pray near her relics. And at first, when the idea was mentioned, the question was even asked, would people even know what a relic is or care to go out if they did know what a relic is? Because sometimes I think we've lost that sense of the spiritual, unfortunately. So there was that question asked, but sometimes people would just happen to be walking down the street and realize that there were relics on display and stumble in and have an amazing conversion experience. And oftentimes there were spontaneous celebrations, so there would be all-night adoration vigils, Marian devotions like the rosary, or the singing of St. Thérèse's poems in the streets. Many times there were confessions heard round the clock as well. So St. Thérèse really was able to be and continues to be a missionary through her relics. Her relics have also been taken to places, not just like churches, but also to hospitals, retirement homes, monasteries, seminaries, prisons, and they were even taken to Dachau concentration camp. So St. Thérèse has really gone into some of the darkest places and brought the light of Christ to others. And miracles are reported, not just of body, but also of mind and spirit as well.
Yeah, we were blessed here in the Philadelphia area up until the last couple of years to have a Carmelite monastery here where her relics could be found. And then when the relics of her parents were on tour, they came here to Philadelphia, and throngs of people came out both at the cathedral and at the monastery when it was open in order to venerate them. And I think sometimes people struggle with that. I'm, you know, my background was, you know, coming up Catholic and disappearing for a dozen years before coming back to the faith. And, you know, when I came back and started to encounter these different activities that surrounded relics, we were blessed here in the Philadelphia area to have a miraculous metal shrine where they have a first-class relics of St. Catherine Laboure, for example. And at the novena on Mondays, those relics are venerated. And since that time, we just actually installed in our own ministry, we're given a beautiful curio cabinet by the president of our radio network here, Kathleen McCarthy, that now houses some 12 or 13 first-class relics. And maybe we have a couple of minutes before we take a break here. When people talk about relics, like if I had heard about them before I came back to the faith and really understood what they are, some people may think it's like voodoo or what have you, where, you know, we have these what we call first class relics that would be an actual part of the person's body, whether it's a piece of bone or hair but some piece of their body that goes in a special reliquary, and then is venerated, which can be done, you know, a couple of ways, right? Where in the case of the Miraculous Metal Shrine, when it's venerated, people are allowed to come up and kiss the reliquary, and other cases they'll just the reliquaries will be made available, and you can pay a visit and offer prayers, and almost as if you were with the saint themselves, right?
Yes, definitely. So I've been to shrines, like, for instance, the Miraculous Metal Shrine in France as well, and you can actually go up to St. Catherine Laboure's incorrupt body, and you can touch the case that she's in. Mm. Or also on display there, for instance, is a relic of St. Vincent de Paul's heart. So you can't always go up and touch, but sometimes you can pray before it, or sometimes, for instance, when I went to the shrine of St. John Newman in Philadelphia, I remember there was a priest there that day, and he blessed us each with a relic, and he, like, pressed it to our foreheads. Of course, it was in the reliquary. But sometimes you can also order through special channels, like a relic from Rome as well, like a first-class relic. So as we're talking right now, I'm actually holding a first-class relic of St. Therese.
Wonderful. They are special. So one of the other people that were trying to get canonized is Venerable Matt Talbot. And I've had a number of people, because of our ministry and we try to spread the word about Matt Talbot and have people pray the canonization prayer and trying to get him elevated in the church. We've been asked by more than a few people about getting first-class relics for Matt. And obviously, they're not available because he's not even been beatified yet, let alone canonized. I have seen relics for blesseds, so it would be for folks that have not been canonized yet. But you have to get, I think, at least a blessed before the church would make them available.
Yes, I believe that's correct.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if you're aware. Have you ever been to St. Anthony's in Pittsburgh?
I haven't, but I would love to go there. I've heard that they have an enormous collection of relics there.
Yeah, it's over 5,000. And I happened to stumble upon it 2 summers ago. We have found my wife and I. My wife has family in Dayton, Ohio, and it was after COVID, and nobody had been out, we wanted to get together, so we decided to meet halfway. And went to Pittsburgh, and when we met up at the hotel, my brother-in-law asked me if I had ever heard of St. Anthony's, and I hadn't. And he started to tell me about it, and you could make a pilgrimage and probably do a couple of days there to see everything that they have, and the more relics, I think, than in any single place in the world, maybe even including a single place in Rome. And just a great collection that this priest managed to put together. I often wonder how he managed to do it, because the story goes that it was during the time of Napoleon in Europe, and the fear was that he was going to ransack all these churches, so he sent emissaries out to collect all these relics in Europe, and they ended up in the Netherlands. And then when he got transferred to Pittsburgh, he brought them with him. And just a beautiful spot, especially if you're interested in relics and especially the saints in general, a great spot to visit.
Definitely, that's remarkable. It sounds like the best kept secret.
Yeah, and especially in these times, right? We need to pray through the intercession of our saints for all kinds of causes, but especially for some of the turmoil that's going on in our country and in the church. So we got a couple minutes here before we get to the bottom of the hour and take a break. Was there anything else you wanted to mention about Bishop Goucher's book, I Would Like to Travel the World, Therese of Lisieux, Miracle Worker, Doctor, and Missionary?
I think that because I'm so devoted to St. Therese, and some of my friends have even called me a St. Therese addict because I have so many books on her, I'm always really critical when I look at a new book on St. Therese. but I was really captivated by this book, and the first third of it, just the testimonies were so hard to put down, because even though they're real, actual stories, it just read like this really gripping novel when you see these people who are in desperate straits and have these amazing transformative experiences and move from, you know, despair to hope. I also think that as we're talking about relics, for instance, that this proof, and I would like to travel the world, of St. Therese's intercession through the relics is a reminder that just as people wanted to become close to the apostles and even to be in their shadow in the New Testament, that we can see how today we're able to ask the intercession of our heavenly friends as well to have healing in all the different places in our lives where we need to be healed.
Very good. Our guest today, again, is Mary Beth Bracey from Sophia Institute, and she and I have been swapping emails on a regular basis for the past few months. She's my contact for helping us get the authors of some of the great books that you've heard discussed on these Wednesday shows. And so Mary Beth is my my contact now to learn about all these great books and line up the authors to come and join us on these Wednesday evenings at 5 o'clock. So we have reached the bottom of the hour. We're going to take a short break, but we have more to talk about with St. Therese of Lisieux. When we come back, we'll talk about I Believe in Love, a personal retreat based on the teaching of St. Therese of Lisieux. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
My name is Mario Diadamo, and I have been a faithful listener to Inner Sign Radio Ministry since 1990, and to Kathleen McCarthy as principal host since 2007. Hearing the witness of Kathleen and her guests has contributed greatly to my spiritual growth. They have educated me about the tenets of my Catholic faith by presenting lay and religious leaders discuss topics that help listeners create an informed Catholic conscience. I always encourage people who are in need of prayer and companionship to listen, call in, and become part of our radio listener family by joining thousands of other people praying for your intentions. I personally can attest to the power of the prayers from the ministry. Kathleen often reminds her listeners that you are never alone because the Lord is always with us. Through this Catholic radio and internet apostolate, the Lord is indeed with us in a very tangible way. Please share the good news as Kathleen takes a leap of faith and expanding to a two-hour program to reach many more people who need to experience the love of God. Thank you.
You're listening to In His Sign Catholic Radio, empowered by the Holy Spirit, bringing the fire of God's love to the world. We are blessed to have had this Catholic radio apostolate for almost 40 years now. Thanks be to God for your partnership. Without you, this radio voice would be silenced. We have a monthly Mass offered for you, our loyal family of listeners. It's our way of saying thank you for underpinning our apostolate with your many prayers and financial support. This is your radio ministry, to be a voice for those who have no voice, to evangelize and to catechize for a time such as this. We know the Lord will bless you abundantly. He can never be outdone in generosity. If this ministry has touched your heart, help us to touch other hearts by supporting us with your prayers and financial support. Call us at 610-527-2906 or visit our website at inhissign.com.
And And welcome back to What the World Needs Now. This is your host, Ken Johnston. And again, I want to praise and thank God for all of our listeners, and thank you for all that you do for us here at In His Sign. One of the things I don't mention often enough, I did mention in the 4 o'clock hour, was the ability to sponsor one of our shows, any of the shows, Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. But in particular, if you'd be interested in sponsoring one of the shows I do, whether it be the 4 o'clock Saints and Sinners with Father McKay or the 5 o'clock What the World Needs Now, would certainly be appreciated. And you can get all the information on that by giving Maureen a call here at 610-527-2906. Our guest today is a self-proclaimed St. Teresa Lisieux addict, as she mentioned before we went to the break, and obviously knows many, many things about this great saint. One of the things I learned on a trip to Ireland, Mary Beth, I was there back in 2015, and one of the churches we visited in Dublin had a statue of St. Teresa Lisieux, and I mentioned Venerable Matt Talbot, and it supposedly he was the first one to make a donation in order for the church to buy the statue. And apparently he must have been on the inside with knowledge, because he died in June of 1925, and I think St. Therese was canonized just shortly before that, so it would have been in that interim that he would have made that donation. So he was he was aware of her, and he considered her to be one of his girlfriends, along with Teresa Avila and St. Catherine of Siena. And what's interesting there is right there, two of the other female doctors. And the fourth one is Hildegard?
Yes, that is correct.
Right, of Bingen. So, but Venerable Matt Talbot had a devotion to the three of the four long before they were made doctors of the church. So pretty interesting. So in the first segment, we talked about a book by Bishop Goucher called I Would Like to Travel the World. In this segment, we're going to discuss a second book about St. Therese called I Believe in Love, a personal retreat based on the teaching of St. Teresa Lisieux, originally written by Father Jean C.J. D'Elbe and translated from French to English by some folks and published through the Sophia Institute. And I know you sent me an e-copy of this book, Mary Beth, and I started it yesterday afternoon, and I laid in bed until about 1 o'clock this morning, I think. I couldn't put it down. And the way it was written, I don't know if it was written this way in the French, and I think both of the books, when you read them, they just read differently. Like you said, you couldn't put it down reading about the stories of the miracles in the first book. In this book, it was, I just wanted to keep going. And it was almost like the retreat was actually being given to me personally, which was I thought was pretty neat.
Definitely.
So
remarkable, yeah. Things about the book.
So in this book, and I swapped screens because I went while we were on the break to look at your blog, and I highly recommend it. Again, if you do a search on The Little Way and then Mary Beth's last name, perhaps Bracey, it'll take you to her website, where it does have her blog and obviously a lot of things about St. Teresa Lisieux. But who was Father D'Elbe, and what was his connection to St. Therese?
So Father D'Elbe lived in France from 1892 to 1982, and he was a French priest who was deeply in love with St. Therese's spirit. As a member of as the Superior General of the Congregation of the Sacred Hearts of Jesus and Mary and of Adoration, his life was deeply contemplative, so he had a strong attraction to her. So he really brings that out, as you mentioned, in this personal retreat. So I've had friends before that are kind of turned off by St. Therese because they think, oh, you know, what does she know about me? She kind of has such an easy life, or maybe she's too sweet or things like that. However, when they picked up this book and read it, they're now her biggest proponents. and love to pass it around to everybody because of how it just really touched their hearts. And it was so hard for them to put down, and they like to go back and revisit it again and again. I think that it was one of the first books that I read several years ago that really helped me to develop a greater love and appreciation for her spirituality on a deeper level, but at the same time, that's very relatable.
So this one in particular, it looks like it was written originally in the French back in 1969, but translated into English, I guess, in 74. And then Sophia recently picked it up and has republished it.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
And there's also a study edition and other resources available through Sophia, too, for the book.
Very good. So what insights in particular into the life and spirituality of St. Therese does this book provide?
I think it provides really a nice compendium of her spirituality. It talks about how she entrusted herself to God with the confidence of a child, and I think that's really important today because so many of us struggle with discouragement when we look around at the state of the world. Also, it really talks about that whole idea of total surrender, so abandoning ourselves to God with complete trust. And that's something also that St. Mother Teresa of Calcutta, who chose her name after St. Therese, really talked about a lot in her writings, too. One of the things that I think is really most beautiful and that I find most comforting in this book also is how it talks about the sufferings that we encounter and sometimes the reason why God allows us to experience those sufferings and the spirituality of the cross. In addition, especially during this time of Eucharistic revival, there is a beautiful chapter on the Holy Eucharist that I think is very compelling, both in terms of helping to talk about our reception of Holy Communion as well as of adoration, and then our call to kind of imitate our Lord in the Holy Eucharist and then to go out and share his love with others. I think that something that I was really blown away by when I learned about the little flower is that Pope Pius X was inspired to lower the age of children to receive First Communion because of her writings and because of her devotion to the Eucharist and spiritual childhood. This book also talks about Our Lady and the saints and how they can help bring us to closer union with God as well.
Yeah, one of the things you mentioned was her surrender, and I got a number of people that listen to this show because of my background and the little following that Father McKay and I have with folks that are in recovery and from addiction. And one of the first steps, the most critical step, is that surrender. And this, the total surrender that you talk about with St. Therese is really something not just for people who struggle with addiction, but for everybody. And apparently that comes through pretty clear in the book.
I think so, definitely. It really goes along with the whole idea of total abandonment to divine providence. And I think sometimes we might say, well, I don't have an addiction to drugs or alcohol or whatever the case may be. But sometimes maybe our addiction is to not want to be self-reliant or to be self-reliant and not to entrust ourselves to God. Or it can be a variety of different things. So St. Therese really encourages us, even when we've screwed up very badly, to turn to him with that complete surrender and total confidence and to trust in his mercy.
So switching gears, the book, the subtitle is A Personal Retreat Based on the Teaching of St. Therese of Lisieux. When I started to read it, I actually felt like I was on retreat. So I was blessed to make my first retreat back in 93 and make at least one, sometimes two or three retreats a year, and how critical they are to my own spiritual life. Was this retreat originally one that Father Delby would have given to groups, or was the book specifically written for individuals to read as a retreat, do you know?
I believe that they were originally given orally, and then they were transcribed. And I'm not sure if in the most recent edition it has this, but so many people, as you said, were just deeply touched by this, these retreat conferences, people from different walks of life. Like in this particular version that I have, it talks about a youth leader, and he says that he found that this is the thing we most need in a tormented world like ours, serenity. There was even an endorsement by a prince from France who said, in this time of uncertainty and anguish, when even many Christians around us feel disoriented, this book is the great answer. It is in the love of God which hovers over us that we find the words of comfort. So definitely, I think it's really so powerful that they were able to take something that would have originally been given as an oral retreat and then to make it into a book so that we could all access it.
Yeah, well, I first looked at the table of contents and saw that it was 10 conferences. Most of the retreats I attend, you have anywhere from 3 to 5, maybe, because it'd be over the course of a weekend. I was thinking 10 conferences. This had to be perhaps a week-long retreat that people would have made. Either that or the conferences were just really short. But as you mentioned, a couple of the topics, the last two were the Eucharist and then Jesus, Mary, and the saints. And I haven't gotten to the back of the book yet, but the love for love and the humble confidence conferences in the very beginning are had me to the point where I wasn't ready to go to sleep. I had to keep going. The book contains a section on how to deal with failure, and I think that for many of us, that's one of the hardest things to overcome in life. We're taught from a young age on how to be successful and the need to be successful, and sooner or later all of us encounters failure of some sort, and that the reaction to that can be all over the place, anywhere from, you know, pulling yourself up by the bootstraps to bouncing right back and trying again to the other extreme where you consider yourself a complete failure and turn to things like addiction and other ways to perhaps find a little bit of joy. Could you elaborate a little bit on how this book tells us how to deal with failure?
Yes. So in her autobiography, Saint Therese mentions it actually several times. And one of the things that I always remember is how she says, if she had on her conscience all the sins which can be committed, I would go, my heart broken, to repent and throw myself into the arms of Jesus, for I know how much he cherishes the prodigal child who returns to him. I think also I remember reading in her autobiography that not long before she died, there was a sister who was really being a pest and really annoying her, and so she maybe said something that was kind of a little bit impatient to the sister. And so Saint Therese closed her eyes for a minute, and she made an act of contrition, and then she immediately resumed her peace and her joy. And the sister was just so impressed by that. And I think that sometimes, you know, when we find ourselves falling into the same fault over and over again, whether it's impatience or whatever the case may be, we can kind of, like you said, tend to get really discouraged, and it's easy to be tempted, you know, to want to give up and just be like, yeah, I can't imitate the saints because I'm just too imperfect. But Saint Therese does the contrary. So in several times in this book, it mentions how the memory of her faults might humiliate her, but it leads her to never rely on her own strength, which is nothing but weakness. So she says, even more, this memory speaks to me of mercy and love. When we throw our faults with a complete filial confidence into the devouring furnace of love, how could they not be totally consumed? And Father DLB also talks about how when we fail, that we can make each of our sins an occasion for us to kiss the wound of Jesus' heart with repentance and confidence. And so if we turn to him with all of our hearts and we make that act of repentance, then it actually becomes a rung and a ladder to ascend in love. So through God's mercy, we're able to grow closer to him maybe than we ever were before we screwed up.
And as somebody that's experienced a lot of that in my own life, and you know, failures and problems, and especially sin, that it is what forces me to come closer to God, to experience the sacrament of confession, and do things like the daily examine and what have you, that bring us closer to God. So, you know, much like the addiction, if we were perfect, I guess there would be no need of God. But because we're imperfect, and some of us, like myself in particular, really imperfect, that those ample opportunities to go to confession and receive those graces, it's actually the, you know, if you look at it the way you just mentioned, that it's that sin that drives us closer to Christ.
Definitely. We're all wounded and in need of healing. So if we come to the Lord, like, for instance, St. Therese also wrote to one of her biological sisters, Celine, when she was really discouraged, and she said, "We would like never to fall. What does it matter, my Jesus, if I fall every moment? It shows me my weakness, and it is a great gain for me. It shows you that I am capable, what I am capable of, and then you will be more tempted to carry me in your arms." So I think that is always important for me to remember, just the need to totally surrender myself in all of my weaknesses and in all of my temptations, to try to, you know, handle everything myself, which never goes well, to entrust everything to God and His Sacred Heart.
Yeah, and you mentioned the, you know, some of the situations that Therese faced, and you know, the trials, and I think sometimes we think that, like you mentioned about your friends over, she lived in a, you know, in a convent, in a monastery. You know, how much infighting or how many problems could she possibly have, you know, living in that situation, and yet we all face trials of various sorts, and you've already talked about a few that Therese herself faced. And one of the questions that we can ask, I guess, is why does God allow these trials to occur, and why do some people seem to always get the trials, and especially if you're one that gets them, you're looking at everybody else, and it's like, why don't they ever get the trials? So why do you think, or why does Therese think that God lets us face these trials?
Yes, that's an excellent question. And as Père DLB talks about, and I believe in love, St. Therese, I think, is really an expert who can help us learn from this, because in addition to all of the other trials she experienced, she also had that dark night of faith. So for at least a year before she died, she kind of, even though she would always make this intellectual ascent of faith, she kind of saw this wall up between her and heaven. And so she really had to make those continual acts of faith in God, because it seemed like everything was dark. And why does God allow these things? So she talks about how He allows it to grow closer to Him, to become more dependent on Him, and to grow in loving union with Him. I really love that line in the poem Hound of Heaven at My Heels by Francis Thompson, where he says, "Was not the darkness the shadow of His hand outstretched caressingly?" So sometimes we think of the darkness and, oh, God has forgotten me, God has abandoned me, but oftentimes He's just drawing us to closer communion with Him. She also, again, talks about how He does this in order for us to remember that we need to entrust ourselves wholly to Him. So St. Paul talks about how he had that thorn in his side, and maybe, like you said, if we didn't have those thorns or those difficulties, then we would kind of forget about God and think that we were superheroes and could do everything on our own. Additionally, it's talked about in here how suffering helps us to be more empathetic with others, so we can have more compassion with others who might be suffering as well once we've experienced difficulties ourselves. Also, we are able to make reparation for our sins and to console the heart of Jesus, to atone for the sins of others. Ultimately, everything is to bring about our lasting happiness and glory. So just like a diamond has to be cut and has to be, I guess you could say, polished before it looks really beautiful, we're all in the process of being refined as well.
Very good. And looking at the back cover of the book, every once in a while I'll check out Matt Fradd on his Points with Aquinas, and he has great things to say about this book, as does Father Benedict Rochelle. So you're in good company. So I think we've covered the questions that I had. Is there anything else you wanted to mention about this book, I Believe in Love, A Personal Retreat Based on the Teaching of St. Thérèse of Lisieux?
I think, as you mentioned before, it's really one of those classics that is really life-changing and really transformative.
Very good. Sometimes when we have time left over after reading somebody's bio that they provide, I'm always interested in how people end up where they have in life, and it's always amazes me how God has managed to get people in just the right situations that He needs them in order to fulfill, you know, His plans. But in your bio, it mentions that you're a consecrated virgin, and I think in this 21st century that it's probably a rare thing. A lot of times when we go through the liturgical calendar and we celebrate the feast days of saints, you know, a lot of times it'll have, you know, Saint such and such, comma, virgin, and we think that it's something from, you know, 1,000 years ago. But I was interested to see that that people and obviously women in particular are still consecrating themselves as virgins now in the 21st century. I was just curious, if you don't mind, how that might have come about and what's involved.
Sure. Well, the whole story is kind of a long way to Tipperary, so I'll try to give the short version. So, as you mentioned before, I also had a wonderful retreat experience in 1993 when I attended World Youth Day in Denver. And at that point, I really felt that God was calling me to the consecrated life. And I went up for an altar call after a talk. And at first, I was only familiar with becoming a nun. So I did contact several different communities, and I looked at that as a teenager. And I visited some communities as well. And all of the communities, you know, were very beautiful, and the sisters were wonderful. But I also read about the vocation to consecrated virginity in a book that one of my friends who was in the seminary gave me by Father Thomas Dubay, which was about consecrated virginity and the celibate life, and it was called And You Are Christ. And that really resonated with me. And then when I made the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius, it was really confirmed in my heart. So it was a long journey with a lot of twists and turns, but every time I would go in a direction that God wasn't really leading me in, I really attribute it to St. Therese's intercession, that she would kind of, like an older sister that wants what's best for you, but at the time you don't always appreciate, she would redirect me and help me get on the right road again. And so then I really fell in love with the vocation of consecrated virginity because the Church describes it as being a mystical spouse of Christ. So I was really drawn to the spousal aspect. And then also, as you mentioned, the virgin saints were really appealing to me as well. I have a great devotion also to St. Katerina Takalwitha. So I really wanted to emulate them. And then when you read the rite of consecrated virginity itself, it's absolutely beautiful. It's absolutely amazing. And I also felt really drawn to imitate St. Therese in her apostolate of prayer. And consecrated virgins are supposed to pray without ceasing for the salvation of the world. Additionally, the fact that I could use my talents in the world, and whether it be writing or whatever the case may be, for God's glory also appealed to me too, because consecrated virgins are also called to be apostles. So it was a kind of a long road, but our Lord led me to where He wanted me to be, and I'm really grateful that I was just consecrated, actually, on Divine Mercy Sunday of this year.
Oh, that's wonderful. And like I said, it's something that we don't hear about a whole lot these days, and I'm glad you didn't mind explaining to me and our audience, because, you know, we never know who's listening, and people may not know that something like that even still exists, so thanks for your honesty and your willingness to open up a little bit. I'd love hearing how, like I said, how God gets us where he needs us to be. We all have stories to tell. And I think sometimes as Catholics, we don't do a great job of that. We tend to keep things to ourselves. I say a lot that our Protestant brothers and sisters, I think, do a much better job of witnessing to one another what God has done in our lives. And I think we're starting to catch up, whether it's through Catholic radio, writing, or speakers that are willing to come out and share their stories with folks. I think it makes a huge difference when we realize that there are other people out there that are going through the same struggles, have overcome difficult times and found their way, especially when it comes to the spiritual life. It can't help but help others grow in their own spiritual life. So I thank you for that. You got just about 40 seconds left. Is there anything else you wanted to mention before we let you go?
I guess I would just say what I think St. Therese would say, which is to have absolute confidence in God, because she said that confidence works miracles.
Very good. Our guest today has been Mary Beth Bracy, here for the whole hour. She does have her own blog. You can find it by doing a search on The Little Way and her last name, Bracy, B-R-A-C-Y. And you'll be able to find links to the books that she's written herself, both on St. Therese and other topics. Just one last call for the last two books that we talked about today. I Would Like to Travel the World, Thérèse Lisieux, Miracle Worker, Doctor, and Missionary, originally written by Bishop Gaucher. And I Believe in Love, A Personal Retreat Based on the Teaching of St. Thérèse of Lisieux by Father D'Elby, available at St. Sophia Institute Press, as well as locally here in the Philadelphia market at the St. Jude Shop. Mary Beth, thanks for everything. I'm sure we'll be in touch. For our listeners, thank you for all that you do for us here at In His Sign. I look forward to being with you again next week. Take care.